Locked On Leafs is going full. Locked On Battle of Alberta today after the Edmonton Oilers beat the Calgary Flames to advance to the Western Conference Final. We'll talk about the brilliance of McDavid and Draisaitl. What exactly is a kicking motion, Dave? We got to get into that controversial call from last night and old Billy Nylander. Yes, that one. Bill Nye, the wrist shot guy. Bit of a tough day at the Worlds yesterday as Canada beat Sweden to advance to the semifinals. We'll get into all of this and more on today's edition of Locked On Leafs.
You're Locked On Maple Leafs, your daily podcast on the Toronto Maple Leafs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Leafs podcast, one-stop shop for all things Leafs. I'm your host, Mike DiStefano from TSN 1050 Toronto Radio, also known as Al's brother on TSN's Overdrive and TSN 1050's Leafs Lunch. Joining me, it's my co-host, Dave Morisuti from Sportsnet, also writer for the NHLPA. Locked On Leafs is a daily Maple Leaf-centric podcast, so be sure to subscribe for free. Wherever you get your podcast from, you can also now check us out on video on YouTube. Hit subscribe. We're on our road to 1,000. Once we hit 1,000 subs, we're giving away a jersey. So in order to be eligible for the giveaway, you got to go and sub up and share it to all your friends so we can get to 1,000 as quickly as we can. Another way to get there, share these videos, post comments down below. And the first question that I'm going to ask the people, Dave, is, was it a good goal? Was it a bad call by the referees? I mean, we got to get into this, man. Like this, look, I know this is Locked On Leafs, and typically we talk about the Maple Leafs mostly, but I mean, this is what the entire hockey world is going to be buzzing about for the next 24 hours. So we got to basically, today's going to be Locked On Battle of Alberta, and we got to discuss what went on because that was a wild, wild series, a wild, wild game five, and it all ends with a Connor McDavid overtime winner. Poetic if you were a hockey fan. But I don't know, you want to talk about the game first and then get into the kicking motion, or should we just start with the kick, man? Like I'll let you start
with the kick, man. It's everyone's still gonna be talking about that.
Yeah, so if you missed the game, late in the third period with about 5-6 or so minutes left in the game, Blake Coleman ends up kicking in a puck, which seemingly looked like it was going in already, but kind of ran into the goaltender a little bit and then kicked the puck in a way. And originally it was called a good goal on the ice, went to review. It was initiated by the officials to go to review too. So it's not like Edmonton had to go ahead and challenge it. It was initiated by the officials, which is interesting. And then it ended up getting overturned. So Dave showing one angle of the kicking motion.
This is the best angle you can have of it, in my opinion.
I think there's another angle. I don't know if you can find it in a short amount of time, but there's another one of like the behind the net cam from inside the crease. That one to me is like, what was your initial reaction of that? I guess so. For those on YouTube, you just saw, you know, one of the angles of Blake Coleman, and the goal got overturned, and the game went to overtime, and you know, McDavid scored. Rest is history, but for that, like that would have stood as the game-winning goal, right? With like a few minutes left to go in the game, and it got wiped off the board. And it is insanely controversial because, look, I believe it was a kicking motion. Like, I think he deliberately tried to kick that puck into the net, but was it distinct enough to overturn a call on the ice? That's where the gray area to me kind of gets really interesting here. So what was your initial thoughts on the goal reversal there?
All right, so I do have that angle just so I can pull it up here, because so initially I thought that it wasn't like it wasn't distinct enough in my opinion to overturn it. I thought I've seen far worse things get called as good goals, and I'm going to show you a second here. But I thought, and this is the behind the net angle, he He is clearly putting his foot in a position to make sure that puck goes in the net.
Yeah, so to me, this angle shows me more than the above cam, and I know I saw Frank Saravalli tweet that out. He's like, this is the one where you can see. To me, it's this angle right here. And, you know, again, if you're on YouTube, you can see this. If you're listening through audio form, you just have to search up this goal, Blake Coleman goal, and you'll find all these replays of it. But here it is right here. Like, keep going back and forth like you're doing there, Dave. Thank you so much. You can see.
NHL needs to hire me for this, by the way.
That's exactly what they need to do. But I did this. I was, like, scrubbing through the second by second, like, frame by frame. And you could totally, to me, it looks like Blake Coleman definitely stuck his foot out there and blatantly, like, kicked the puck. It wasn't a kick as in it left the ice, but he blatantly took his foot, motioned it toward the puck to push it into the net, which is technically, by definition, by the NHL, a kicking motion.
Yeah, so that's the part that I'm struggling with, because
if he would have just directed, you can direct a puck.
Like, if it bounced off his skate and in, he's fine, right? If he's moving his foot in a way. So I'm going to show you a play here. This is one Scott Wheeler kind of tweeted out.
Okay.
This was, I think it's Chris Tierney. It was against the Leafs, believe it or not. So here's our lockdown. Here's our Leafs content for that to make this relevant.
There we go.
That was deemed a good goal. So if you're listening on the audio part of the podcast, Tierney not only turns his skate, but his skate is moving forward with the puck. Like, he put himself in a position to make sure that puck was going off his foot and into the net. To me, this was a more blatant one. If you're watching on YouTube and comparing them, this was more blatant to me than what Coleman was doing.
I'm going to go retweet this on the Leafs Lunch Twitter on the Locked On Leafs Twitter account, so that if you are listening, you know, on your way to work or whatever, if you want to go and follow us on Twitter at Locked On Leafs, we have that goal that we'll retweet from that Scott Wheeler shared, so you could see what we're talking about. But I'm with you on that one too. Like, that to me, I remember that goal as it happened, and I was furious when that was called a goal. I'm like, there's no way, absolutely no way. Like, that is 100% a kicking motion. Like, that should not have been called. And to me, like, just because that one was allowed, like, I thought that shouldn't have been called. So, I mean, I like to say that I'm consistent. That should not have been a goal. Neither should Blake Coleman's. But then that's where the NHL gets into a tricky situation in the situation room, where it's really, we've kind of had this issue throughout the playoffs. It's kind of subdued a little bit in this round, but the inconsistency in officiating, the inconsistency, with the situation room, what's considered a goal, what's not considered a goal. Like, I understand the frustration where, that Chris Tierney goal was considered, they allowed that one to count, where this Blake Coleman one didn't. It's like, they're two very similar plays in which a player is directing a, puck with that foot towards the net, like, very clearly doing that with a bit of a push. But just because you made a mistake on the Tierney goal doesn't mean that you allow this one, right? You got to correct those mistakes. And how do we know that after that one, Gary Bettman or whoever the hell is in charge of, keeping the situation room accountable said, hey, you screwed up on that one. That should have been a goal, or that should have been a no goal. And next time you get that situation, make sure you wave it off, because that's by rule not a goal. You know what I mean? Like, perhaps that conversation did happen, because I still to this, like, I forgot about that. And then you brought it back up to me, and it just, I'm cringing. How the hell did that count? It's ridiculous. But also, like, the Blake Coleman one, there was a discussion about whether or not the kicking motion that half of the people see, because it's pretty split for people who think this was a goal or not. And the ones who believe that it should be a goal believe that he was trying to stop. And the reason why it seemed as though he was kicking it or his leg was going in toward the net that way was because his skate caught the pad of Mike Smith. So it kind of turned him a little bit, which in turn moved his entire body, which rotated it in towards the goal. But if I'm watching that play, this is how I saw it. And Jennifer Botterill actually basically her explanation was pretty much my explanation, also coupled with like Kevin BX's, because I was having a conversation with Frank Corrado, and we were kind of going back and forth on this one. At first, he thought there's no way that you can overturn that. And I'm thinking to myself, I think you can. And I texted him and I said, it looks like he crossed under his leg to direct it in. And then I said, most guys who skate through the crease like that end up kind of bailing or diving across. Like, do they not? Like, if a guy...
We saw a similar goal. I can't remember who scored. It was for the Flames in the last game where literally they scored the goal and they were going to go into the post, but they extend forward because they don't want their knee or something to crash into the post or their leg.
Exactly, right? And to me, that's exactly what should be the... That's the normal reaction, right? If you're just, you know, that should be the split second reaction that your body will do that. Even Kevin BX has said, you don't want to lunge out and pull a groin. Typically, your brain will try and bring your legs as close together to regain your balance. That's just what your brain will tell you to do. But if you're telling your brain, no, I need to stay on my feet, keep balanced so I can get this puck and direct it in with my other foot, that way I can maybe score the goal. And that's how I saw that play. And therefore, it was purposely motioned in by him purposely kicking it out. And that was, he was hoping that that would be the end result. It wasn't I don't think he was stopping. I think he was purposely kicking towards the puck. Because I think that if he was trying to stop, he would have stopped the second that he realized that his toe had been picked off by the goaltender and would have probably done a full sail dive across the crease like we see 99 out of 100 times in that particular situation.
So here's my thing about it. And Brent, who I think it was Justin Bourne that mentioned, is like intent is not something you can judge upon with these plays, right?
That's fair.
You don't, right? So I think the intent part is, I know Botterill and BX were like really adamant on, oh, we know what he was trying to do there. It's like, it doesn't matter. The point is he's trying to score a goal. The intent is to score a goal. I think the part that you have to be very careful of too is, and Brendan Morrison kind of brought this up too, is like a kicking motion, you have to kind of lift your skate up a bit, right? You can drag your skate along the ice.
I don't think that's the case. I really don't think you have to lift it up personally. I think you can easily kick. I mean, like in soccer, you don't necessarily, like you can just direct your foot in towards and even like graze against the grass and still get a redirect in soccer. And that's almost, that looked like a soccer-ish goal, right?
It's just, you know what, I think this is where you need to really define, I guess this is where the NHL really needs to define what's distinct.
Yeah.
Right? Distinct enough. I'll actually might as well, while we have this open here, I'm going to read what Daryl Sutter said about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have the comment. Depends what you call a distinct kicking motion. If somebody is on the ground and you lift your foot and kick them in the head, thank you for that, Daryl, that's a distinct kicking motion. If you slide your foot on the ground, it's not a distinct kicking motion. So clearly, here's the thing. It's a motion that you're pushing your foot forward, right? That's what the NHL is deeming a kicking motion. So I think where people are thinking is a kicking motion is like you're passing a ball in soccer. You don't even have to make a big, you know, we're not saying you're kicking your foot like you're trying to score on a penalty shot. It's more so you're directing your foot forward. Like that, that's where I think we need a better idea of what the NHL truly means with kicking motion. Like, because you don't want guys just swinging their feet with those skates. And that's the whole reason why they brought in the rule in the first place. So I also just think, yeah, the whole point of that, the goal, it was likely going in. I think what Coleman was trying to do there is it was slowly going in.
That's the tough part, eh? Like, that was going to go in regardless. If you're a Flames fan and now you're packing it in for the season,
yeah,
that goal was going in regardless. And you know, that 50-50 of a call is the reason why, you know, that game goes to overtime and McDavid's able to end it. It's got to be so gutting right now if you're a Calgary Flames fan.
No, that's really the tough part. And I said as soon as to myself, I was just like, as soon as that goal was this last, I don't like this for Calgary. Because, yeah, like, let's be honest. I mean, we're going to get into the series more so in the next block, but that was their chance to keep their series alive. It's so hard to come back from a play like that, no matter what the circumstances are.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. We'll wrap this conversation up. I'm sure, you know, everyone listening to this, watching this has had the same conversations. It was probably dominating the text chat throughout the last little bit of your last 24 to, you know, 12 to 24 hours, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. I know it dominated a 4 or 5 of my group chats that I had going tonight, including our Locked On group chat. You know, it's an interesting one, but I think ultimately, I think they got the call right, but I am ultimately surprised that they had the balls to overturn such a 50-50 play. I think that's my overall sentiment. Like, I believe that by rule, probably, you know, he meant to kick that puck in, or at least direct it in purposefully, and contorted his body in a way to make sure that he kind of did that. But at the same time, it is very gray, and it was such a 50-50 play that I'm surprised that they felt like it was so distinct that they felt that they could overturn the goal call on the ice. That's ultimately how I feel about it. The right call, but I am so shocked that they made it. So shocked.
Yeah, that's really the part for me too. Is like in a series like this, you don't want to have anything like that really decide. Like, it has, like, the whole point of reviews also is for more like blatant stuff, things that are like really obvious. These really like close calls, it's almost like you have to have like for sure evidence that you can overturn it. And I guess the refs just determined that, you know, they felt that the play was blatant enough that it was enough to overturn. I just feel like in something like that, you have to be almost 1,000% sure. And you don't want to have any, if you're the NHL, you just don't want this to be the dominant storyline of how the game ends, because this was the best series of the playoffs.
Oh, by far, man. This was awesome. Like, and in a way, I was a little heartbroken that they overturned the goal, because I'm like, no, I want that to score. I want the Flames to win, so it guarantees us another Battle of Alberta. It's been, honestly, some of the best hockey that I have seen. The whole playoffs, really, has actually been terrific, yeah. I would say, outside of this Rangers-Carolina game series. This was
the thing about that series.
Why don't we get into it a little bit later? Because we're actually running quite late. We gotta hit a break here.
Yeah, and Athletic Greens is not gonna be happy with us. They want us to talk about
it. Want us to talk about it. So why don't you talk about Athletic Greens, and we can kind of break down this game, because it was a wild game, it was a fun one. Yeah. We can talk a little bit about the playoffs in general, kind of where our heads at as we're starting to get in. You know, it's two teams now who've gotten into the Western Finals, still have two teams who need to advance to finish up round two. So we can kind of look at the playoffs as a whole. And then also I want to talk a little bit about Willie Nylander and the tough game he had. It was really just like one tough play, actually, that he had that kind of cost his team, that led to the elimination of Team Sweden at the World Championship. So we'll get into all that and more. But first, Dave, I want to tell the good folks listening and watching this fine program about Athletic Greens.
Yep. If you're looking for a person, no, if you're trying to solve one problem of optimizing the immune system and ensuring better gut health, let Athletic Greens do that for you. Just so I'll explain what the stuff is. It's one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, which will allow you to absorb 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All of those things that I've mentioned there. It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. It's cheaper than getting all the different supplements you probably take already. You're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews recommended by professional athletes, trusted by leading health experts such as Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NHL Network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/NHL Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily national insurance. Sorry, daily nutritional insurance, but it's also national wide.
Welcome back into the Locked On Leafs podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano, Dave Morisuti with me. It's a little bit of a Locked On Battle of Alberta today, but we'll get back to we'll still have some Leafs content. We got a little chat about William Nylander and kind of the tough night that he had tough morning at the World Championships yesterday. But let's break down this Battle of Alberta a little bit. The game itself, we went pretty in depth on the controversial goal reversal, but let's talk about the game itself because it was just fantastic, man. I mean, like the Oilers overcoming a 2-0 deficit, a wild second period, just an insane second period. That's was it 6 goals in that period, and they were all like bang, 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 bang. It was insane. You got the reverse winner.
4 goals in just under a minute and a half. It was the fastest 4 goals in the Stanley Cup playoffs ever.
By 22 seconds.
Ridiculous.
Like, just completely cleared the bar. It was insane how, like, legit, if you would have, like, watched, was it Zach Hyman, I think, scored to tie the game? I believe it was, I want to say. But if you would have went after that goal, like the first of the 4, if you would have went and like literally gone to the bathroom quickly and then went and go downstairs to your beer fridge, grab one beer, pull it back up, crack it open, go and sit back on the couch, you missed 4 goals. Like, that's how insanely wild that second period was. It was crazy. And then the third period, a little bit more subdued, but then, you know, the wild goal reversal. And then Connor McDavid poetically wins it in overtime. Where do we want to start here, Dave? I guess, like, how surprised are you that the Edmonton Oilers are off to the Western Conference Final beating Calgary in 5 games?
Man, it's crazy because I did not expect Edmonton to get to the Western Conference Finals. More so because I didn't think they were the best team going into the series. They had the best players, but this is where I thought Calgary had the advantage because they could play the style that was needed. But then I also kind of forget that Connor McDavid likes to play against Calgary sometimes, and he really liked to play against Calgary in this series, right? And Daryl Sutter even said it. It wasn't necessarily the best team that won the series, but it was the best player that won the series. And I think that holds. I think this, if you're looking for any silver lining for, you know, if you're a Leafs fan, it's that if your best players are your best players, you can move on and do pretty well in the playoffs.
Yeah, I sent you a tweet. Let's pull that tweet up by Jason Greger from TSN Radio out in Edmonton. He had an insane tweet for how productive McDavid has been. McDavid has been on the ice for 38 goals for in the playoffs in just 261 minutes and 41 seconds of ice time. 38 goals. That's more than St. Louis, the Rangers, Tampa Bay, Calgary, Carolina, Florida, and Colorado have all scored. Sorry, not Colorado. They have 40. So St. Louis, the Rangers, Tampa, Calgary, Carolina, and Florida, more goals than their entire teams have scored through the entire playoffs. Like, that's how dominant Connor McDavid has been. He's been on the ice for more goals himself than what any other team besides Colorado has been able to muster up and score through the entire playoffs. That is insane, David. Absolutely mind-boggling when you look at this guy. He's got 26 points through 2 rounds. 26 points in 2 rounds. And what's even more crazy about that, The guy sitting shotgun to him, Leon Draisaitl, also has 26 points in two rounds, and this man scored three or more points in every single game in this series, had 17 points in the five-game series. 17 points in five games for Leon Draisaitl against the Calgary Flames on a bum ankle.
Yeah, I was just about to say, that's the probably the most impressive part is he was doing that while also dealing with an injury. Like, that's pure dominance. This is what the Oilers' identity has been for so many years, and it hasn't worked for them up until this point. Like, if you really think about it, like, this has been the most... Like, that formula of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl kind of leading the charge hadn't worked for so many years, and then they went up against a team that just had no answer for them. Really, it was also, they relied on Jacob Markstrom to try to solidify things, and he couldn't do it either.
Yeah, that guy, I feel poorly for the way that things went for him in this series. You go from being a potential Vezina, nominee or Conn Smythe nominee in the first round, going toe-to-toe with Jake Oettinger in what was an incredibly low-scoring series. And then you come out in the Battle of Alberta. This guy allowed at least four goals in each and every game. Every single game. And this is someone who's nominated for the Vezina Trophy. It's wild what the Oilers were able to do. And like, the Flames were a stingy defensive team all year long. That's what was so kind of flabbergasting about, the way that Edmonton was able to put pucks in the back of the net. That's just not something that teams were able to do very much on Calgary. Like, that top line was an excellent 200-foot line through the regular season. Their defense was unbelievable. I think, obviously, the health or lack thereof from Chris Tanev definitely hurt them a little bit. But
torn labrum, apparently, for him.
What's that? Torn labrum?
Torn labrum. That's what's been reported.
Yeah. That would make some sense. But also, like, let's give credit to Edmonton for buying in, having, I think there's a maturation process coming with this team. I mean, whether it's Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's been there forever, they brought in a great character guy like Zach Hyman. They brought in Duncan Keith. Say what you will about his game right now, but I mean, Duncan Keith is still a guy who knows how to win. Like, when they allowed that goal in game four, that awful goal from the other side of the blue line to tie it up, it didn't really faze them. Like, they still went out and were able to go out and win that game, even after giving up that tying goal. So, I think there's a maturation process that's kind of happening with the Oilers. You got a goal from Puljujarvi today. Evander Kane's scored a whole bunch of goals so far in these playoffs. Hyman, six goals in five games. They're just getting a lot of contributions from everybody up and down the lineup, and it's good to see. But ultimately, they're being led by the big boys, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And my question, I guess, to you, and we can probably end it here and then kind of go off and talk about some other stuff. But like, how sustainable do you think it is that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, how much longer can they play like this? How much longer can they put can they stay with the throttle fully, up there and keep they basically have like, I don't know. Did you play Need for Speed growing up?
A little bit, yeah.
So it's like they've kicked it into NOS. Like, they've just kicked their NOS into high gear, and it hasn't stopped since, the last couple of games in the Kings series. Eventually, you would think that your engine's going to start to blow a little bit. And, man, it hasn't at all in this series. I mean, I guess tonight was a little bit of a quieter night for McDavid. And even he, funny enough, at the end said, yeah, it was pretty trash tonight. So I was glad to come up with the winner and finally do something for my teammates.
That's just such a low blow to tell the other team. I wasn't really that good, but we still beat you.
I know. And, Leon's on a bum ankle. So it's crazy, man, that the Oilers are off to the Western Conference Final. But I'll be honest with you, man. I really hope that Colorado gets through. I think they will. They've got a couple of opportunities to get it done. But like, I'm so looking forward to Mika Jesus versus Mac Jesus matchup in the Western Conference Final. Boy, is that going to be entertaining!
Yeah, I know. The NHL needs it.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed we get that matchup.
No, Mac. Isn't it Mac Daddy? Isn't that his nickname?
Yeah, but I mean, I think McJesus versus Mac Jesus. That's pretty good. Come on. You got to give me some credit there, pal.
I do think, considering what I think Colorado is going to come out flying after what happened in game five.
Oh,
I
didn't even realize.
They screwed the pooch. They're going to make up for it. So, no, I think I'm that. When the second round started and I saw the Oilers start to show some life after that abysmal game one, I'm like, wouldn't mind seeing Colorado Edmonton Western Conference final.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people are in that boat where you kind of start really like, oh, Calgary probably win this one. That'd be great to see them. And then as McDavid picked up steam, you're like, man, I don't want to stop watching this guy. Like, I just want to continue to watch Connor McDavid do what he does. You know what I mean? Like, he's the best player on the planet. I want to continue to watch good players play in the playoffs in meaningful games. I want to continue to see these guys elevate to that next level. It's amazing. What we're seeing just in hockey in general has been fantastic. It really, truly has been. Even like the game the other night, Colorado and St. Louis, that was a terrific game, right? Like, there's so much theater going on. There's some blown leads. There's some comebacks. There's overtime winners. It's great hockey, man. It's great hockey. And I hope that a lot of the friends and you know, folks down south are appreciating it. And oh, I think it's doing a good service for kind of the first year of ESPN and TNT having the rights to everything. Hopefully this starts a long, prosperous relationship and they could pick up a whole whack of fans with having an incredibly successful and entertaining and captivating Stanley Cup playoffs. Because that's exactly what it's been.
Stars sell the game, man. Stars sell the game.
Exactly. That's exactly it, my friend. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports information. Find all the latest odds, news, sport developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, the NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. Head to the website today to use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. Welcome back into the Locked On Leafs podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano, Dave Morosutti with me. New pods coming out every day, Monday through Friday. So make sure you are subbed up so you can get that brand new content each and every day delivered to you, whether it's wherever you get your audio podcast from or over up on YouTube now, where you can subscribe to us as we continue our road to 1,000 subs. All right, Dave. Did you want to have a couple of comments on the rest of the playoff series really quickly? And then we can get into this William Nylander story.
Yeah, just remind me to have a triple shot of espresso when I watch, you know, Rangers and Hurricanes, because that series has been so, like, it's just been, if it wasn't for the atmosphere of the crowd at both in Raleigh and MSG, like, I would have no interest in this series. But, man, Tampa. One thing, I don't know if you saw John Cooper's comments about how banged up Tampa is right now. They put themselves, like, they literally were throwing their bodies at everything.
Yeah.
They paid the price. So you got to hope that they have enough left in the tank for another two rounds.
Yeah, they're just praying that Carolina Rangers go seven, which, I mean, Carolina, they've won every single home game. They've lost every single road game. So there's a good chance this one's going seven games based on that statistic. But yeah, I think the unders have hit in all five of the games, I want to say, to this point in the series. Hasn't been very high scoring. It's been pretty low events hockey. And yeah, it's not one that it's been at the bottom of the list. Let's say that in terms of Stanley Cup playoff series. The Colorado St. Louis one has been fantastic. We chatted about that a couple of days ago. You can go check out that podcast if you want to know, you know, more about that one. And obviously Tampa rolling, steamrolling, sweeping the Cats. We chatted about that as well on the podcast already. So why don't we get into this? Get into William Nylander. Get in a little bit of Leafs content here. It is Locked On Leafs after all. And it's not even really Leafs content. It's just the William Nylander content.
Hey, he plays blue and white. He was wearing a blue jersey in this waiver.
Yeah, he was, and he was doing weird things that he doesn't typically do in a hockey jersey, which got a lot of people a little frustrated, ourselves included. But his world championships is over. Sweden ousted in round one, I guess, in the, what was it, the quarterfinals of the world championships. They had a 3-0 lead to Canada, surrendered it in the third period. It was very reminiscent, actually, to like the St. Louis game the night before, St. Louis and Colorado, up 3-0, and then lost the lead in the third period, took it to overtime, and then old Bill Nylander takes a brutal tripping call. And 17 seconds into the power play, Drake Batherson scores, Canada wins, and Willie's sitting in the box as his team gets eliminated, and he's done hockey for the rest of the summer.
Really unfortunate, great, because he had 3 goals in 3 games. He scored in that game to give them a 2-0 lead.
Yeah. No, he was having a terrific tournament, and it's – you know, we talked to ad nauseum the other day about like the clip that went around when he was playing Lapia and he was just going bulldozing guys and looking like Tom Wilson out there. But he's also scoring goals. So like he was doing a little bit of everything. And you know, I wonder if that's him test driving a new style of play that potentially he could try and carry over into next season. I hope that's the case because that'd be awesome. But ultimately, like, that's going to leave a sour taste in your mouth, man. Like, you, even though you had those good plays that you made and you played well, to end it sitting in the box on a tough tripping call like that where you just kind of got beat, you weren't moving your feet, and Batherson was trying to make a, you know, attacking the net, and you end up getting your stick in front of him, and you got to go sit in the box 17 seconds later. You're eliminated from the tournament. Kind of a tough play to take if you're Willie, but is what it is. I want to get into the discussion though about William Nylander, and if he, you know, is it fair to have expectations that he should evolve into this, not necessarily a two-way forward or power forward, but somewhat incorporate the game that we're witnessing at the World Championships, the guy who had that aggressive edge to him, to incorporate that into his NHL play. Is it fair to now have those expectations after seeing it in this tournament?
I was thinking that maybe he was trolling Leafs fans a little bit, the ones that said that he can't play that style. And it's almost like, yeah, I can. I just haven't really been, it's not really what I've been asked to do probably. I think if you're Nylander, you need to kind of decide what type of player you want to be, right? Do you want to be the one that gets criticized constantly for not going for a battle in the corner? Or do you want to be the one that was getting all the praise despite the Leafs losing against the Canadiens and being praised as the best Leaf in that series? And we saw a bit of that in that series against Montreal. It wasn't to the extent of Lafayette where he was knocking guys on their ass. But it was an effort. It was, he's going in on the forecheck. He is creating turnovers. He's doing the things that good players do because they are determined to win. And so that's an honest conversation that really the Leafs should have been having with Nylander for a long time. But I think they need to have it a lot more now.
Yeah. And
they need to figure that out from him. Are you willing to do what it takes? If you're not, we have to find guys who are. And I think that's the message I think that the Leafs front office need to have. And they should have had that at the end of the season.
I would be shocked if that conversation hasn't been had many times, though, Dave. Like, you can't just 6 years into his career say, oh, hey, by the way, can we get this out of you? Like, that's something that probably has been established from the get-go. Like, ultimately, you want your guy to be rounded out 200 feet, give effort 100% of the time, always go into the corners if you can, always try and win board battles. Like, that's just, you're a better hockey player if you're doing all of that. So I don't necessarily agree. Like, I think that those conversations had been had many times throughout his career, probably since he was, you know, a peewee, 12 years old. You know what I mean? So it's there. You know, and sometimes he needs a little bit of a push, I suppose. But I just don't know, like, why can't guys evolve? Like, we see players evolve all the time. If you remember DeMar DeRozan, right, to use like a Toronto example, every year he would come back, right, and he would look like a different player. You know, he would try and work on something, whether it was a long range two or, you know, whatever it be. And he would add new styles to his game, or new, new tools to his toolkit in a way. And he just kind of rounded out his game and just became overall better. Why can't Nylander do that? And if that means adding a little bit of edge to his game, you know, going out there and competing in board battles, trying to win those and being aggressive, like we've seen it in at times, we just need to see it way more consistently, I think. And the question is, like, why can't he evolve into that? He's at that age, in his mid-20s, where he's going to plateau at some point. Well, take that next step before you plateau. And I think that's that's the expectation that I kind of place on him, because I watch the World Championships and I see him in this jersey and I'm like, this isn't the same William Nylander that plays for Sweden, that plays for the Maple Leafs. It's like he's got a twin that just plays a different style.
Maybe it's Alex Nylander playing in a number 88 jersey.
Maybe it is. Well, I mean, that'd be the one that's playing for the Leafs, I guess. I don't know. But, I mean, Alex Nylander has nowhere near the amount of skill there. But I know it's a joke. But I don't know, man. I was listening to the Chris Johnston show today, and he was saying that he had a conversation with, I think it was an executive out in Sweden, and said something about, you know, when he's playing for that club, he's kind of the top dog. He's the alpha male. Especially at, like, the World Championships, where it's not always the top tier talent that end up going. It's typically, yeah, you know, some SHL guys, and then whoever was eliminated from the playoffs. Typically, if you're a good player, your team's in the playoffs. So when he's over there, he's typically the top guy. And when he's the top guy, it seems like maybe he's more engaged. And I look back to last year in the playoffs when Tavares went down and he had to be the guy, with Matthews and Marner not really producing, and it was him, Kerfoot, and Galchenyuk on a line, and he had to drive it. He had to be the alpha on that line, and that's where he found his most success. William Nylander's game started to elevate this season when he came off of Tavares's wing to play with Engvall and David Kampf. He kind of saw him take over games at that point and elevate that line because he was the guy. I wonder if when he's playing next to John Tavares, if it gets in his psyche that he's not necessarily the go-to player on that line, and if it somehow affects his game. Like, that's now the conversation that I think that I'm wondering. I don't know if we'll ever get that answer. He's never going to explicitly say that until probably long after he retires, but it's now a question that I have.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably something to say that there's a bit of maybe an alpha dog mentality in terms of Tavares is the alpha dog. He's got the C.
Yeah.
He's got the experience. So you kind of defer to the veteran a little bit, but I don't know. I think this is where I think Matthews and Marner, it made so much sense to have them both together because they played off each other. It wasn't one relying on the other. They figured a way to be dominant together. Draisaitl and McDavid. It's not McDavid leading it all the time. Draisaitl, as we're seeing in these playoffs, he's getting his
four apples last night. Four apples, this guy.
Right. So that's what it takes. Like, as a star player, you just got to step up. It doesn't matter who you're playing with or who you're playing against. It's up to you to do it. Right. And so If Nylander has that psyche, it's the wrong psyche. Someone needs to get into his head that he's got to be he's being paid to play a certain way or play a winning style, and that winning style relies on him to kind of lead the charge. Even if Tavares needs someone to pick him up, damn straight, well, Nylander's got to be the guy to do it. He can't be that sitting there saying, well, if JT's not really feeling it, like, He's my captain. He's my goal. No, you pick up your captain. Like, you got to push him.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know if I honestly do think that everything with Nylander is mentality. Because it's never been about a talent. No. It's never been about talent. And I think that's what makes it frustrating for those who kind of talk ill about him, is that they know the talent is there. They've seen it. They can't deny the guy is talented. But what they always say frustrates them is that he can't put it together with, in terms of his effort and consistency. When it comes to like effort, you can't teach skill, but you can teach effort. I think that's what drives a lot of people nuts, especially with Newell and Nylander, fair or not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see if what Nylander we get. Do we get his twin that was playing at the Worlds this upcoming season, or do we get the traditional, you know, William Nylander who will kind of float in and out of that elite star status like we saw happen at times this season? We'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, Dave, I think we're going to leave it right there. I'd like to thank everyone for listening and supporting the show. You can subscribe to the Locked On Leafs podcast on all podcasts and platforms and receive daily Leafs content. Follow myself on Twitter at @Mickey_Canuck. Follow Dave at @D_Morisuti. Also, follow the show at Locked On Leafs. Go ahead, smash that like button if you're here on YouTube. Leave a comment as well. That would be greatly appreciated. Let us know. Goal, no goal. Give us your thoughts on what happened on that goal. And also, if you want to chime in on that Nylander conversation that we were just having, please do that as well. And just a reminder that we would also appreciate if you could go ahead, leave a rating and review on iTunes. If you're listening on iTunes, that'll help with the algorithm and allow the podcast to kind of be seen for those who are searching for some hockey content. And you can also go ahead and share it up. Show it to all your friends and family who are looking for that, you know, that Leafs content. Even though that the Leafs are eliminated, we're still bringing it to you Monday to Friday, 5 days a week until the end of the playoffs. And we still are going to bring you content at, you know, once the playoffs are over through the off season. All right, that'll do it for today. We'll be back another episode on Monday. Enjoy the weekend, ladies and gentlemen. But until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On Leafs.